Welcome everybody to another episode of Orelebo Heights. You know what it is, out here in 2019, doing it big, or not doing it all. Actually, I don't know yet. I haven't decided that, but I'm still here with the podcast, and I have, like I always do, super duper awesome guest here, Nilsa.
Hi, Eddie.
Hi, welcome. Thank you for joining me. Thank you for coming, for making time. Even though we just had a conversation about everything that happened.
Thank you, Eric. I feel so honored to be here, and I haven't been at this space like
the station, the store.
Yeah, it's beautiful. If people have the chance to come here, it's a beautiful store outside from the station, and it's
Mariachi Plaza. Yeah, and then outside of the radio station, we're in the booth. So, and yeah, I think thank you. If you haven't been to Espacio 1839, that's where we're recording from today. Not a remote recording, which I've been doing a lot lately, but Nilsa's here because she is an amazing writer. I got to know her personally through a friend of a friend, who one of them is just walking in right now. because they're married. I read a part of your book over the break también. Keeping y'all in mind, because we were going to hang out before the end of the year, but you were sick.
Oh, yeah. I was sick of being studying a lot. So, yeah, I couldn't attend to this.
It's funny, too, because we were sick, too.
Oh, my God.
So you could have just hung out sick.
I have the pleasure to know Eric, to know you since I moved to LA. It was very important because you were actually with my husband's family. I think the first people I met when I was actually dating with my husband.
Who is your husband? He just came in here right now.
Oh, my husband is Anthony Sagman, another writer.
And then you brought another friend too.
Yes, here's my friend Ginés Collado. He's from Spain. He's right now studying here in UCLA.
Yeah.
So he was very curious about visiting here, Boyle Heights.
It's a very rare treat, not only to meet you, but also because you have never been to East LA or Boyle Heights before. So it's a rare treat in this day and age to meet somebody who hasn't been in the neighborhood, but, you know, generally wanted to come and visit and learn more about it. So most of the time folks just want to come here and gentrify the neighborhood. So
I told him, I mean, like, the amazing people who lives here, the sort of this story about here, how the big huge community of Mexicans living here, mm-hmm. and all that. You can have a different taste from the Mexican things that you can find in LA. Here is like,
right.
It's more, well, I would say authentic, and I was eager to bring him and give him a little tour.
Try to go to Mercadito, see if maybe there's still time later today.
Yeah.
But, we haven't seen each other in a while. Again, because you're busy, you're out there publishing, writing, hitting them books. So I'm glad to see you. Glad to see y'all are doing better. And just starting out 2019, so let's get started. So, Nilsa,
yes.
Where did you grow up?
Well, I'm from Mexicali, which is like without traffic, 4 hours from LA.
Only 4 hours.
But of course not, because there's always traffic. So it's like five-ish, 6 hours from here.
Yeah.
It's a city just in the border. People all the time think about the border. Oh, yeah, Tijuana. No, it's not Tijuana. It's 2 hours from Tijuana, but we are at the border. So
it's like the president said, you go left and then you make a right.
Yeah, exactly. So I'm from there. I grew up there up to when I was 18, and then I moved. But in a sense, I was always, not always coming to LA, but it wasn't that unfamiliar, LA.
Yeah.
Because it's not so far, and because we share, many things. Even I'm from Mexico, I mean.
Yeah, no, there's a lot of similarities, because when I take people somewhere to eat, they'll tell me, like, oh, this feels just like Mexico or something like that. Because, it's almost universal wherever you go, people taking the culture with them. When you were growing up in Mexicali, what was, like, some of your favorite things to do?
Oh my God! Well, first thing, let's set up the time because I mean, when I grew up over there was the 80s, the 90s, right? Early 90s. So no internet, right? So,
no.
And my mother was I grew up under kind of a military system with my mother. She was so strict all the time. So I was not even allowed to watch a lot of TV. So I was mostly like at my house. I grew up almost by myself because I don't have like many siblings. So I was at my house who, thank God, it had a long, long porch. So I was mostly outside playing.
Okay.
And but major issue, it's very hot. I know LA can be hot. We can reach 90s, hundreds.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
But imagine that the whole summer be like 110 degrees, 120 degrees.
No.
So it's like I have heard a writer saying like when you live in Mexicali is like living in a kind of a space ship or a space capsule because you are all the time under, you know, like the air conditioning. So you go outside and then you feel like you're going to die, and then you get inside of the car, you turn on the air conditioning, and then like just like that
from one air conditioning to another.
Like a funny thing, there's when I was you know, growing up, now there are more like malls, but at the time was just like one mall. Like, and the thing about it was like, oh, the air conditioning is so great.
That's what I do now. I go to the Montebello Mall for air conditioning.
So what people were doing, and they still doing it at this time, is like they were taking older, you know, old people.
You know what?
Over there,
the summer, the city of Los Angeles. That's actually what they told people, that if you can't get to the library or to a recreational center, that you should go hang out at the supermarket or at Target.
Yeah, so
like the city was telling you that.
So my city wasn't really. Now there are more cultural things to do, but at the time, I cannot remember like many things. It was just like maybe just one gallery.
Wow.
Maybe just one museum. Really, I'm not joking. And then.
Do you think like all these new changes are for the better?
Yes, definitely. Now there are more activities. Usually, government, they used to, you know, blame the, you know, the people, like the citizens, that, oh, it's because they don't like to do this stuff. But I don't think so. It's more like they weren't really offering anything. So, of course, if you don't know how you're going to really think about, like, oh, it would be a nice idea to have here, like, a gallery. But now, yeah, I can see more.
It's very similar here, too. They don't ask us what we want. They just put it.
You need a Starbucks.
Yeah, no, that's how we end up with the bike racks that look like butterflies and nobody uses them.
Yeah.
But we had another compa join the conversation right now.
Star.
I think he wanted to talk to the manager with that haircut. Say what's up, Ken.
Hey, what's going on?
Yeah, so they're all just this is how I know Nilsa through the 6 degrees of Ken Montenegro. Having known Ken, he introduced me to Anthony. Anthony married to Nilsa. Nilsa, you know, brought her friend from school, and now we're all here just hanging out.
That's how it works. Yeah.
So you were there till you were 18 in Mexicali,
yes.
And then what happened?
Then what happened is, I knew since I was that age that my passion was, you know, literature.
Oh.
Yes, for
was
sure.
It something when you were younger?
Yes. I mean, when I was in high school, I was at this workshop for 2 years where you were working on your writing, reading, and everything.
Oh.
So since that time, I was sure I wanted to be a writer. But here's the thing. When I told my mom that I wanted to be a writer, and in addition, it's not like, well, I was kind of good in mathematics, chemistry, and everything, right?
But that's what you like the most, is writing.
No. I didn't like the most, like, the chemistry and mathematics. And,
okay.
But I was good at it.
Okay.
So my seat is like, you know, industry, all this maquiladora stuff, you know.
This is like the border in the 80s.
Yeah. So it's like to study something related to be an engineer or economics, or that was the thing.
To what the jobs are around there for.
Exactly. So my mom says, no. So, I mean, if you study literature, what are you going to do for a living? You know, te vas a morir de hambre.
Yeah,
right?
It's universal. Yeah. Now, nobody wants their kids to be creative.
Then I learned that it's like the major discourse, not just in Mexico. It's it has been translated.
Universal.
Well, I mean, like, if your kids took up the Penn Anthony, would you be supportive?
Of course I'd be supportive.
Would you let them stay there till they're 30, like, living at home?
Baby
can't. Yeah, so I thought, what can I do? Because I knew that I needed to leave my city in order to know more, to learn more, to have all these things that I needed to be more reachable.
To get
right?
more air conditioning.
So many stories. So I thought, what can be the thing that I can study not at my city that can
take you to places?
So I thought, in Guadalajara, there's the major Feria del Libro, biggest in Latin
that's
America.
That's right, yes. Even I know this, and I'm not like that plugged in. It's
so, and remember, no internet. So it was like, now we know more about other book fairs and everything. But at the time, my information was so little. So I knew that I needed to go to Guadalajara because all the book fair was there. So in my idea, that was so
when you were 18.
Naive, I'm going to be there, close to the graders and everything, and then I'm going to succeed, right? So I thought about, I got a scholarship to study chemical engineering.
Oh, wow.
Which was not, it was the only kind of a bachelor that I was in my city. So if I wanted to study that, I needed to go to a different college.
Wow.
We didn't have it. I worked hard on finding something that wasn't in my city.
No, I mean, if you can get a free ride out of the neighborhood, why not?
So I found a good university. I got the scholarship. And then I arranged everything, like find someone, like a roommate and everything. So I...
Dang, so 18 out the door, living your college life,
So my mother didn't want me to go, but at the end I sell this idea, like, this is a great university, I get in the scholarship, so she said, it's okay. But I didn't like that wasn't my idea, like, really to be an engineer.
Yeah, well, that's what convinced your mom to let you go.
Yeah, exactly. So when I moved over there and then starting engineering, oh my God, it was horrible. It was so horrible, torturing. I went through it. I finished. I graduated. I did my I did a thesis and everything. I worked as an engineer.
Dang. Wait, what did you do as a chemical engineer?
Well, when you think about a chemical engineer, usually, people who are not related with the area.
In the field,
things like that you're going to be in the lab. That's not. What we do is like a chemist can give us like the formula to make something. Let's think about like ketchup.
Right? Okay.
So what I do is like I design the whole in plant. You know, the process, everything. So I design, like, the which pipes are we going to use, which engine are we going to use, what is going to be the pressure, the temperature, the speed, how the dimensions of the tank.
It almost sounds like you're a chef, because you're, like, making precise measurements
exactly.
about different things.
Exactly. It's like I'm a chef, but I'm big containers, you know? So that's what we do. It's
I had it something more. I mean, it's just dumb, because I think of, like, shows like Breaking Bad. Because, like, you think you're out here making meth doing something.
So I can design how to, you know, the big production of meth, you know? It's not necessary. Like we can work in a lab, but it's mostly like to design things and to
interesting
to calculate.
Right. So I mean, that was your degree. Did it because it was easier to find work doing that.
That was the second thing that happened when I graduated. My mother said, "Well, it's time to come back to Mexicali," and I said, "No, I cannot go back." So. So I needed as fast as I was able to find a job.
And then what you were doing, like where you were finishing up your degree, what were you doing on the side? Were you still out there trying to go to readings, trying to meet people like you said you were?
First thing that I did when I was in college was to find another workshop to start my, you know, sharing my work. So all the 4 years I was in college, I was at a workshop. When that was the best thing that I was able to do, because there I met one of the professors who was going to introduce me to some other people, some other workshop, not from my university, mm-hmm. a different one, who was in more, was closer to actually the Feria del Libro, and yeah.
All right, so it worked out, nice.
Yes,
yes. So you're still out there networking, hustling, and then do you remember what you were writing back then?
At that time I realized through that workshop that, well, what I was starting writing was short stories.
About just anything? Was something personal?
I would say, not personal, because I have been all the time kind of, it's hard for me to really expose my feelings myself. Yes. It's like, if I do it, most of the time I try to do it like in a way that it's not too obvious. Of course,
so this character had this problem.
Yeah.
and that's what they went through.
But I didn't want to talk about my life, or because the idea that I have about myself is like I'm not really like this person that it's.
You're
so
out here
funny.
Crazy. No, you're not Bukowski.
Exactly.
Out here.
So
that's funny, because I mean, in my own personal experience with it, I this is way too loud. I never really had any formal, like. Training in terms of like I took classes for it in school, except for journalism. I mean, but that's not creative writing in a way. So for writing like short stories, poetry, and things like that, the most experience I had was just like the traditional English classes that we had going through the school system. And then, you know, maybe the teacher would ask you to write a poem or something like that. But it wasn't until I was in my early 20s that became a very healthy form of self-expression. Because I'm like the complete opposite. I can't be creative in terms of like writing original stories or things that. But just ask me to like tell you about my life and like.
But sometimes it's not like that original. It's more like sometimes when I'm sitting and listening to other people, I listen a lot. That's a thing. Right now I'm talking and I'm talking a lot. But most of the time I'm kind of quiet because I'm listening, and then some people say the most. Think that you cannot have an idea. Like one of my latest short stories is about a husband who his wife passed away, right? Mm-hmm. And one of the wife said like if she dies, she would like to have her ashes to be like
scattered
in a mall, because she liked to shop a lot, to go to the mall all the time. And it was kind of a joke all the time she was telling, right? So when she passed away, he said, like, okay, so she said that, I'm going to do it. And that's the story, right?
That sounds like my story, because I've been telling people I want my ashes spread on white people.
So, but how did I get this idea? Well, one day I was, you know, like changing the channels on TV, and then when it was a super stupid TV show, and then one of the guys said like I hate my wife, she's all the time shopping at the mall. If she dies, I'm going to spread her ashes at the mall. So that was that's how I started like thinking about that short story.
Gotcha.
Most of the time is that. Of course, there are elements that can be true or can be from my reality in the story. But
to make it your story.
Yeah, my story. But but that's it. It's,
okay.
Yeah, I don't like to be the main character. No.
So was it hard for you to balance that when you were in college?
No.
Requirements of this is my major and I have to keep doing all these labs.
No, of course not, because it's like a first thing, I was 18, 19, so it's hard to have balance in your life when you're that age.
It's like, vámonos de parranda. ¿Por qué fuimos?
No. So I was new. I mean, I was living in a new city. I was studying something that I wasn't convinced, which was, by the way, so hard. I needed to invest many hours in studying calculus, numerical analysis, organic chemistry, and then trying to create my own stories. So no, there was no balance. Of course, my moment, like the happiest moment every week, was to go to this workshop to read my stories, to share them. One thing that happened that was one of the things that helped me a lot was like another friend not the same degree, was another engineer. He was at the same workshop. So we were together. We were like thinking about being writers, but the thing is, he was very good as an engineer, so he really liked what he was studying.
He knew where the money was at.
Yeah. So all the time I was saying, like, I'm going to, you know, drop out, school, and then start studying in, you know, literature. Mm. But my mother was, no, you're not going to do that. So I wasn't. Now I think that I didn't have enough courage to fight for it. But in my nerdy way, I was trying to fight. I was like trying to, okay, because I didn't have courage, I didn't have money. Okay, I'll keep doing this. But I'm going to keep writing and keep reading. I was all the time at the library of my school, all the time reading, not chemistry.
I was just there because I didn't have anywhere to hang out. I'm not gonna lie. I was a new kid at my school a lot, so I just hung out at the library. I guess now that you're an adult too, but like during that time, especially, you know, when you were younger and you were learning that this is what you wanted to do, and then in college actually doing it, where were some of the folks inspiring you to do this? Like, was it specific writers, you know, authors, maybe, like you said, your friend who was there with you?
Okay. I would say that one of the writers that I discovered, that it's so obvious, but at that time it wasn't that obvious, and I was studying engineering, and so... It was Juan José Arreola. And I discovered it by myself. I know it's very popular. Like saying, oh, you discovered Juan Rulfo. Duh. So for me, it was a thing, you know?
Because you didn't, like you said, this is a different time.
Yeah.
You know, information.
You didn't have, you know, like Google the 20 best Mexican authors for all the time. No,
exactly.
I didn't have those
exactly.
tools. So, I still have my hotmail.com email, so think about it.
It still works.
So I discovered that book by myself, and that's the thing about him. I read his short stories, and for me, those short stories were like kind of they reveal a lot of the thing that I would like to do. Like one of these stories was like I cannot remember the name, but it was like women who's supposed to be wives, but they were kind of like robots, you know. So they were like selling them on the streets, and then they were not functioning well, etc. So it was these stories were like written by a Mexican, but they were not about this. Like a celebration of being Mexican. We're more like I would say, of the. I mean, don't misunderstand me. Pedro Páramo can be universal. I mean, you can read it in China, you can read it in Japan, and you're going to love the story. But these things were not like with all these Mexican elements.
Okay.
I liked these stories, and I liked that they were so condensed, like in 3-5 pages. You have a whole, you know, a broad spectrum of things going on.
Wow.
But, and in addition, at that time, now I'm different.
Of course.
I didn't like the stories with so many details. I like more like the stories at that time, like with action, you know, things going, happening.
Yeah, no, I mean, it's a different level of understanding, because now you're part of that creative community and you can see what people are doing.
Yeah, now I can appreciate like a novel of 500 pages of descriptions and everything. But at that time, my pace of reading and my pace of writing was totally different.
Okay.
So I love that writer. And at that time, that's funny, now that I realize that, another friend who is an engineer too, he introduced me to one of my favorite writers, which is Italo Calvino.
Okay.
He's an Italian writer.
Italo Calvino.
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 Italo Calvino. And he gave me a book that the name is Las Cosmicomicas. And the good thing about that book that helped me a lot is, like, they're short stories about, like, the creation of the universe. And they're written in a way that if you love mathematics or you love calculus and everything, you can get the sense of that kind of logic on the stories. But if you don't know anything about calculus or mathematics, you can enjoy the stories as well.
Wow.
So
this is a great book.
That's one of the best books I have ever read. They're like the different theories combined with these short stories. Like, there's one that the name, I know the name in Spanish, I don't know the name in Italian, but it just is Todos en un Punto.
Okay.
It's related, and then the story is like everybody was living in a punto, which is related to the Big Bang. So the story is like we were living together all the time, but it was hard, you know, when you were washing your clothes, you know, because we didn't have a lot of space to, you know, line them to dry.
No.
And then you have to see things like that. And then the story tells that, but something happened, and then we were like a, you know, exposed for that punto, and everybody was taking their own way, blah, blah, blah. This is stories. I love those stories.
We have to check this out.
Yeah.
And I'll probably have to listen to the show because I didn't write that down. But and then one other thing I did want to ask you too, now that we're still in that, you know, memory of that age, what was some of the music you were listening to? Because I was like, oh my God, I didn't know Nilsa got down with like ska music.
Yeah.
Well, I think the crew here is going to kill me because I know it's more sophisticated, their taste in music, but at that time, remember, the 90s, so...
Yeah.
So, I was listening to some ska, ska music. There were, like, some bands, even... There's one that I liked a lot, that it was actually, I think, from Orange County, the Real Big Fish.
Yeah!
I'm sorry.
It's on my 90s playlist.
Yeah.
Let me look this up, because I probably have it on my playlist right
now.
Yeah,
so...
Real Big Fish.
Real Big Fish, so... So I was listening to that band. Was it
the song "That's the Feeling That I Get"?
That's the Mighty Mighty Boss.
Oh, see, I.
That's so another.
I think most folks, if you weren't a '90s like person, you could see them in the movie Basketball with Matt and Trey Parker, the creators of South Park.
So that's another one. Then you know, No Doubt,
of course.
So I like it. And then Wizard, which I still like.
See, you know, I used that one.
Yeah, you see, but
suck
I can,
it up,
I can,
man.
I have this feeling from this crowd. It's like they're
stuck in the 80s. We can't get out of that. I can't get out of it some days, but
yeah. So that was the kind of like, you know, that kind of music. I still like some of it, you know.
What drew you to the English ska? Was there and no music like scene in where you were when you were going to school?
Like music, like
was there no other like places where like ska they were playing ska, or was it just one type of music they were playing?
No, it's. I mean, there were different type of people because there were like people listening like some music in Spanish. I think it was more like the friends I was hanging out.
Oh,
they were into that type of music. But at school, I don't remember people playing that music.
Yeah, no, because I mean, for me, that was, and for some folks too, that's where you go out there, you know, you're young,
you're
tired of like being at school all day, so you go out and like
do
something crazy at some club or something.
No, and by the way, I didn't go, I mean, I wasn't going out like a lot, like at a time.
Just like, I gotta do my homework.
Yeah.
Like, it's 10 o'clock, you have a whale to meet.
That's why I don't write about myself, I'm so boring. It's like, I was this type of student who wanted to be, you know, like the A's, you know,
yeah, the higher grade.
Yeah, but okay, to be honest, in addition, I needed to do that in order to get to keep my scholarship and everything.
Of course, because I mean,
I come from a family with just like a single mother who was working hard, you know, to give me what she can give to me.
Mm-hmm.
And she didn't put any pressure on me. It was more me trying to do my best. So I when I was little, I realized like, oh, okay, I'm... And I was stupid, but I was like, okay, so I'm not very, you know, funny. I'm not, like, beautiful. I'm not... So that for me, it was like, you have to study and be intelligent in a way that people think that you're intelligent, like getting good grades.
Okay.
But now I realize it's not the only way, you know?
Of course.
There's so many people that I know that are super intelligent, and it's not because they get, like, A's at school.
No, that I'm one of those people. I had también estos...
So that was my analysis when I was little, you know. So I have to do, and I mean, yeah, it's, yeah. I need to work hard. I need to get good grades to get scholarships to study somewhere.
Yeah,
so.
Yeah. Of course, that's what's like drilled into us at such a young age. Okay, so you know, you're out there. You graduated school. You have your side job. You're out there, you know, going to readings, trying to mingle and connect with the writing community. What was your, like, I think you, let's put it this way, your first, like, break into, like, knowing that you're in the right direction, that you should, like, keep going and not just be a chemical engineer?
Took me long because the thing about the money.
Mm.
I mean, I didn't have any type of support. Like
starving artists.
Yeah. So even I knew that I needed to you know, change my job or stop working as an engineer in order. Or even, let me tell you this, when I finished, I said, well, okay, so maybe I can do a postgraduate studies in related to literature, right?
Mm-hmm.
But at a time, it was hard. Because I was an engineer. So here, I think maybe in the United States, it's easier in a way to think or to think about a person that wants to learn more about different areas,
yeah.
But not in Mexico. In Mexico, like, you're an engineer. What do you want to do something in literature? Like, no.
It's not how things work out here.
Yeah, it's not that easy. So that was not my choice because I was an engineer. So you're an engineer, right? Stay in your lane. Yeah, it's like you're kind of condemned. And then I didn't have any money. And then in addition, as I said, like working and trying to write. And then my mother passed away.
Oh.
So that was another thing that kind of not stopped me, but it was like a thing that I need to take care of it. Like my mother.
This is a family emergency, yeah.
Yeah. So now, in addition, I needed to continue doing what I was doing and then dealing with this. So that's when I came back to Mexicali because of my mother that passed away. I needed to take care of so many things that were going on.
Yeah.
And, yeah, it wasn't that easy. Actually, I would say, like, when I finally said, like, or I stopped working as an engineer was in 2010, which is less than 10 years.
Yeah,
yes.
That's not too long ago. Wow.
Yeah. But the moment that I quit my job, I saved some money. Not a lot. Because then something happened. Like, it was so funny. Quick story. Like, maybe we can go back, but I quit my job. You know, like, this is... I'm going to do what I really want to do. I'm not going to think about consequences, right? So I didn't have a lot of money, but I said, okay. So I quit my job with no job, right? Like just quitting your job,
mm-hmm.
thinking about you're going to look for something. And then an earthquake happened in Mexicali in 2010.
Oh.
It was 7.1.
Ooh, that was a big one.
Yeah. So many places were kind of destroyed. And then many places were like not schools. I mean, the city needed to take care of the city.
Yeah.
So it was like a slowdown in this thing about getting people new job positions and everything. I was so scared. Like, oh my God, what am I going to do? So But I was lucky. I found a job.
Wow.
Yeah, I was very lucky. I found a job, my first job into humanities as a literature teacher.
Wow. Right off the bat, you're a teacher.
Yes, yes.
Wow. Was that hard?
It was very hard. Well,
because it was your first time.
It was my first time as a literature teacher. Mm-hmm. Because one of my jobs before engineering, I mean, as an engineer, was to be teaching chemistry college.
Oh, okay. So you're familiar with the teaching environment.
I was familiar with teaching, but not teaching literature.
Gotcha.
Yeah. I have done so many things.
What was it? College? High school?
Literature was high school.
Okay.
Chemistry was college.
All right. So you're like out here telling these mocosos to sit down.
Oh, my God. Yeah, I was like, you know, I'm going to close the door. Nobody get into the classroom after this time. Like,
oh, you try to be that teacher.
Yeah, okay, if I see your cell phone, I'm going to take it.
Oh, my God.
Like that, you know? Yeah.
I was one of those terrible students. I'm sorry.
That's all the things that, like, I know that you didn't read the novel.
I know. Yeah. What were some of the things that you have them read? Like Fast Food Nation?
No.
That's what they made us read.
It was changing all the time, but because we were in Mexico, we had to read, you know, the kind of canonical writers like Carlos Fuentes.
The same here in the States. Yeah. You know, there's like a traditional academic. Yeah. Like, this is what you gotta learn.
Yeah, and then when we were reviewing like literature from the world, we were reading like Charles Dickens, and then
The classics, of course.
Classics, yeah. And then some the Greek tragedies.
Como chingan con eso.
Oh my God! No,
I enjoy them. I enjoy Shakespeare, all of the, you know, all these classical quote unquote works. Pero también se pasan that everybody has to know them. Like some, like I don't know for y'all, like Ken and Anthony, like y'all were probably like around the time when like they made you memorize like Chaucer and fucking recite it in front of class or something, right?
Well, he was a master at that. I spoke for
Sid. Oh man! So, how long were you teaching high school before?
I was teaching high school for 3 years.
Okay.
For 3 years.
Ya estabas enfadada? You're like.
No, not really. No, I really like. I don't think that I was enfadada. Like doing like, you know, working as an engineer.
Yeah.
Yeah, because that was another story. When I was working in a farm. Yeah.
Were you making out here GMO corn?
No. Yeah, the chicken was
GMO chicken.
No, when it was eating the
okay
GMO.
All right, well it's kind of like being a thing now. So I mean we're kind of like, I don't know how pressed on time we are depending how the person who's after me comes, but I did want to make some time for you to read from one of your books.
Sure.
It's going to be in Spanish. I apologize if you're not a Spanish speaker. Sorry.
I mean, I can read like one of the stories. Like,
yeah,
a part in Spanish and there's a translation.
Read one of the stories. We don't need to translate it.
Okay.
This is my show.
Okay. So I'm going to read just a little. That's the thing. Most of my stories are kind of long. So I never read like the whole story because
what's long?
Long, like too many pages, like 15 pages. Like 15 pages.
Oh, that is long. Yeah,
yeah, yeah. Yeah. So, but I'm going to read like a fragment from this story to get a taste of what I write.
I can play some Real Big Fish in the background.
So most of my writing is it's happening in the border.
Of course.
So and many of my stories take place in Mexicali. Not
mm-hmm.
all of them.
Mm-hmm.
This story is about like a kind of this type of age, like 18, 19, young people.
Okay.
Maybe younger. And the name of the story is Y Todo por la Zuli. So
Zuli's the person, right?
So
everything for Zuli.
Yeah. Y todo por la Zuli. La es como, es una mujer, ¿no?
Okay.
Zuli. And this story, what is the thing about this story? It's like people that have read this say like, or what they like about it is like, in a way I'm trying to...
Yeah, what are the cliff notes?
the reproduce like the way people talk in the border.
Oh, people, the accent,
the
mannerisms.
And then some of the slang. Not a lot, but a kind. They say like, yeah, sounds like people talking. So that's a big compliment for what I do, right?
All right.
So
vamos a ver.
So, bueno, y todo por la Zully. El personaje principal es Nicolás, ¿no? Nicolás llamó al mesero y pidió una Coors Light. Aproveché y yo también dije que otra. Para esas horas había perdido la cuenta de las cervezas, pero me sentía bien. Podía seguirle la plática. Cabrón, la pinche Zully me mandó madrear. Escuché cómo mi amigo tomó el bastón del carro para defenderse y luego el relato de la huida de los vatos. Siempre eran cosas por el estilo. Güey, ya te dije, te van a venir chingando. Se lo repetí, aunque no me hizo caso. Eran casi las 12 de la noche y yo sentí que podíamos seguir pisteando. Era sábado y ninguno de los dos teníamos nada que hacer. Así que le dije al Nicolás que le cayéramos al Oxxo por más cheves y de ahí nos íbamos a mi cantona. Arre, contestó. Nos subimos a su pickup y nos fuimos acá escuchando puro Depeche. Llegamos al Oxxo y todo comenzó. La Zully estaba allí. Nicolás, en cuanto la vio, se le quiso acercar. Lo detuve. Güey, al rato, no la armes de pedo. Pero como que no le cayó la curada, pues si ella les había ordenado a los vatos que se lo chacalearan, ¿para qué le buscaba? A mí no me gustaba meterme en pedos. Nos hicimos güeyes en la sección de los refris y cuando ya no la vimos, agarramos un 18 y pagamos. Al salir, lo primero que encontramos fue un rayón a lo largo de todo su pickup. Pinche Zully, ¿ves lo que hizo, cabrón? Yo solo vi ese rostro que no me gustaba. Vamos a su casa. Esta pinche vieja me va a escuchar, dijo. Y luego se subió a su carro todo encabronado. Güey, ni sabes si va a estar en su casa. Traté de que agarrara la onda. Me vale madre. ¿Qué? ¿Le sacas? Abrí una cerveza y me la fui tomando para calmarme. Si algo no me caía bien del Nicolás, era que siempre buscaba los madrazos, pero pues era mi compa y la neta no me dejaba abajo, así que yo tampoco lo iba a hacer. Entonces, acá pensaba en qué haríamos o qué haría este güey en cuanto llegáramos a la casa de la morra. Tenía la esperanza de que el seguridad del fraccionamiento nos impidiera entrar y asunto arreglado. Simón, así fue. Ni madres que nos dejaron pasar. Había que identificarnos y avisar a la familia que visitábamos. Culeros los vatos. Güey, pues si sabías que así era aquí antes. Sí, pero antes acá me dejaban pasar, nomás les hacía una seña. Sí, güey, pero eso era antes. Se calmó de nuevo, íbamos a mi casa cuando vemos a la Zully que iba sola en su carro naranja. Nicolás inmediatamente se lanzó a perseguirla. Ella se dio cuenta y aceleró perdiéndose entre las calles, pero el Nicolás se puso bien loco, y yo rogando porque no la alcanzara. Todos sabíamos del poder de su familia. Eran dueños de media ciudad. Desde un principio yo le advertí que no se metiera con esa morra, que la neta sí estaba buenona, pero luego iba a tener pedos y se lo iba a cargar la chingada. No me hizo caso, se hizo novio y solo para durar bien poquito. Y bueno, sigue la historia de Nicolás persiguiendo a la exnovia por toda la ciudad.
Simón.
Y se meten en muchos problemas.
Me imagino.
Y bueno, era un poco el ejercicio como de rescatar.
Y en esa edad, I'm sorry, English.
Oh, I'm sorry.
You see? I have to mentally tell
sorry.
Myself.
Oh my God, what I was trying to do, you know. To try to reproduce the way people were.
Yes,
like,
yes, very much.
Talking in the border.
Being in that age of, you know, you're in your early 20s, late, almost out of your 19s. And, you know, you're really infatuated with the person you're dating, and you're kind of going out of your way, almost in very unhealthy ways, so, you know, continue making that work. And that's part of what the story got into. But yeah, thank you, Ilsa, for sharing that. One thing that kind of came to mind when you were reading it too is, and given like the theme of that story and your experience, you know, having the balance that, you know, you went to school and that gave you the opportunity to continue studying. Not necessarily what you wanted, but, you know, it did give you opportunities to keep doing it. What's some of the advice you would give to some of the younger folks you know, maybe in that situation where they want to do something creative, not necessarily writing, but maybe arts, music, and then I think we all have to balance with that responsibility of our what our parents want for us, which is, you know, a career that's financially secure, and us going into the arts is not the best option sometimes.
Yes, it's hard to give an advice because now when I see things in perspective, is at the end worked for me. Mm-hmm. What all the things that I did, it worked. But I was kind of lucky, I would say, because the chances to not be doing what I'm doing right now were high. Mm-hmm. Because it's the reality is when you graduate from something that is not related with the things you want to do, and then you have to work. I mean, to keep doing the things that you love, it's hard. It's like it drains all your energy. You know, that's why the name is trabajo, because you have to work. So it's not like a place like if you don't like it that you're going to be having fun.
Yeah.
So I would advise maybe against the odds to try to do what they really like, what they really love. I know it's maybe it's not the best advice, but I mean you don't know for sure if you're going to have the time to really do what you want.
Exactly.
Right? So because you can make a whole plan about like in 5 years and 10 years and then I'm going to, who can guarantee you that you're going to even live those years? So I would say like just try hard what you want to do, be responsible in a way that try to. You know, to get the economic independence, because that's important.
Yes.
Because it's easy in a way to say like, oh yeah, but someone is going to be supporting me all the time. No.
That's
I think that's kind of irresponsible. So work hard. I mean, and things aren't easy. I know now there's this kind of such way of thinking that is like, oh yeah, you can learn a language in 5 minutes and then you can lose weight in 2 days and then you can fix your ugly relationships in with just one book. My experience is not like that. So all the things that you really want and their pressures and they require some kind of job, some kind of sacrifice.
Work.
So if you really want in your heart, like with your heart to do something, you have to work hard. That includes not to sleep, maybe work some extra hours, many, many extra hours. And in addition, getting so many arguments with the people you love, because most of the time, the people that love you, because they love you, they want to give you their best advice, but it comes from their own experience. So you need to think about your own path of life, what you really want, and work hard.
Work hard, man. See, and that very much echoes to how I'm currently living my life, where I have, you know, my day-to-day job that, you know, helps me be financially stable.
Yes.
I'm not going to be buying a house anytime soon, but I don't want to. So.
Yeah, so and establish your priorities, because the idea of success and the idea about happiness is different for all the people.
Exactly.
So some for
right,
some
exactly.
for all some people it's about money
and or marriage or having
marriage
kids.
Or kids or some kind of a leveled life, you know, standards.
Uh-huh.
So you need to think about it. What do you really want? And
this is more like advice about life in general than becoming a writer.
No, I mean, you know what? It's kind of the same, because I know people who are focused or drive to this thing about getting all the awards.
Yeah.
So if that's what you are looking for, you need to work hard. So that means submitting a lot of your work, working all the time, you know. And there are people who are concerned about creating good literature.
Yeah.
So in order of that, you need to read a lot. You need to check all the your writing and correct all the time and be surrounded by people who can be good critics of your work.
Yeah, supporting
and,
that.
Yeah, and not like just be surrounded by people who are telling you that you're the best.
Oh,
you know,
I'm definitely not around those people.
For arts, yeah, you need to work hard and.
It's a struggle.
Yeah.
We were going to be eating soup a lot. So, given, you know, you've gone through a lot, there's been setbacks, as in life, there's always setbacks,
yeah.
But you've persevered, and now, you know, now in the time that I've known you, I've always seen you as like, wow, like Nils is really accomplished.
Oh, thank you.
You're out here reading in Mexico,
yes.
All these different places. I like, how is it for you now? Like, kind of
yes.
Like now that we've been talking about how you've
yes.
been struggling for so long now. It's, and now you're being invited almost like
yes.
around the country and the world.
I don't know. It's like I've been working hard, and then most of the time I'm thinking about this. I don't know how it works because it's. I don't think that I know a lot of people,
mm.
but the few people that I know, they have been helping me a lot. So sometimes it's like I met someone in the past, like many years ago, and then for some reason. That person, for some other reason, is not organizing something, and that person, because they
yeah.
really, they think about inviting me.
That's how I end up in like the most random places.
So I have been invited to several festivals to present my work. I mean, to publish is not easy, but I
nope.
have published my work, which I feel so happy, so grateful, because. I mean, they investing their money to publish you, and books. You know, now it's kind of something we need to have some faith, because it's not the most, I mean, popular thing or to think about making money about like printing a book.
Speaking to that, how do you think, or has it helped or has it not helped? Now that we're like so connected, and there is a big focus on digital like literature and being more connected. As opposed to like you have to physically print these books, and
I love,
people have to go out of their way if they
yeah,
want
it. Yeah, I love it. I love. I mean, it, for me, it's better to know things that not to ignore what is going on. Right?
Okay.
So this idea that people can access or have a digital version of your book, that for me, that's wonderful. If that is going to make you read your work, for me, that's fantastic.
Okay, so you're saying I can steal books?
I mean.
Okay, I don't do that.
No, but I mean, and then, the publishers need to find their new ways
to
make it work, you know?
Yeah.
But, I love the idea that people say, like, people don't read these times, but I think, in a way, maybe we're going to find a better way, but they're reading a lot. Because now they have different devices or ways to approach.
No, I mean, that's true. For me, I do both. Like, if I really want something, I'll go out of my way and get it as the book. And most of the time, especially, like, news, because it's so quick and it's changing on a daily basis. That's usually what I'm reading daily.
Yeah, so, yeah, I'm not at all against that idea. But, of course, I love, like... The physical
mm-hmm.
the smell of it.
Yeah.
That's the way I enjoy the most reading. Yes.
I realize it's just I'm just getting high off the ink smell. They're new books.
Just because of that, right?
Yeah.
I see.
What has been one or some of the festivals where you were just like you're there, not just. You know, attending, but you're there as like one of the featured folks that kind of like, wow, I'm here. Like, do you think you made it?
Well, I would say the last one that I went was in Acapulco.
Ooh.
So when I told my friends like I was invited to go to Acapulco for a literature festival, I was like,
wow.
No, you're kidding. And I said, yeah, I'm going.
When you say invited, this is the festival
the
inviting
fact,
you
that
they're
means,
paying for your
that
flight
means the festival is paying for your food, everything. So that was the moment. And then since I'm living in LA, I was like, oh my god. So they invited me to go from here, from an international
flight.
That's
not a cheap flight.
So I was feeling like I was a big star. And I wasn't, because the people who were invited there, they were big stars. Like there's a new Netflix show. The name is Diablero.
Oh, I saw that show. Ken's son put me onto it when we were eating dim sum.
So the writer, the novel that this show is based on, was at the festival.
I didn't know it was based off of a novel.
Hagenbeck, that he's a big star. He has written like 20 novels. So.
Better throw a book at him because he messed up his book. The TV show is not good.
Yeah, that's what they say. Like, the book is better. So So I was like, oh my God, these writers have been writing for many years. I was kind of, for me, I was feeling like the fan, not really like a writer who was part of the festival. I was like,
oh my God.
I want an autograph from these people. No? But yeah, that was the last one that I was feeling like so happy, grateful,
wow.
nervous because I was at these panels with some other writers talking about, like, one of the topics was to talk about criminals in literature and their crimes. So we were, of course, given some references of what we have read and everything. And I was so nervous because they have been reading and writing about, this literature, detective fiction. And I was, like, so nervous, like, oh, my God, I'm going to make a mistake.
You gotta go in there with that confidence. It's like, it's my turn to talk. I'm here. That's what you paid that flight for.
So, and in addition for that festival, we're just three writers, women writers.
Okay, because I was going to say, like, and so, I mean, I was being, like, nosy and metiche looking at your Facebook and, like, some of the photos just to see what you've been doing.
Yes.
And I noticed a lot of the festival photos, you're usually, like, one of the only women there,
too. I'm kind of used to it, but shouldn't be used to it because it should be more female writers.
Yeah.
So, yeah, at this festival, we were just three. And I was like, so many things going on there. Yeah, now there are many writers, women writers, but it's more like they don't get invited. It's
it's the politics a lot of times of these
days.
Yeah,
recently, a writer that I know, she published a book named, I cannot remember the precise number, but it's like 512 escritoras mexicanas desconocidas, something like that. I cannot remember the... Or the name of the book was like Historia Oculta del Cuento Mexicano, something like that. But what she does is like an index of more than 500 writers, Mexican writers, who have been published. But people all the time say, oh, no, there are no women writers in Mexico. Yes, they are.
They just don't know where to look.
Yeah.
They're not even paying attention
because
they're men. Men are trash, 2019. It's basically forever. Wow. I think I remember hearing about that Acapulco trip because we were trying to hang out and we were like, oh, dang, Acapulco, I hope they don't get shot.
Well, yeah, I'm a rock star.
You are.
I'm not.
Now, in your more present life, you're in school again.
Yes, and that's why I'm so grateful. I mean, for literature, that's why I say, like, yeah, if you like arts, go for it. Because the things that I love the most, the things that have been making me happy and good experiences, and by the way, all the trips, they're coming from literature, from something that I have done related with literature. So I'm so happy that I was admitted at the program from PhD program in UCLA.
Well, La UCLA.
So, La UCLA. At the Department of Spanish and Portuguese.
Dang.
I'm so happy. Así, super, super feliz. Yeah, that I'm there. So it's my first year studying there.
Oh, that's right.
Yeah.
Awesome. And then you're like meeting awesome friends. You're out there making it happen.
So I have a colleague, a classmate here. Which is doing the same, but this is his second year.
How are you finding the workload this time around, like as opposed to like when you were younger?
it's totally different. It's like,
because it's like doctoral work.
It's a lot of pressure. The readings that you have to do, it's crazy, the list. There's like a pile of books and articles and everything. I love it because I've been waiting for things. After telling you my story all my life, I mean, to really study literature.
Nerd out.
Yeah, so I do not complain. I love it. I feel kind of, because my classmates, they're younger than me, but I think...
That's something I wanted to ask, too. There's a bit of an age difference coming in.
I know.
And also a cultural difference.
conference. Yeah, I remember the first day that I was invited to the open house, and then I was listening to all my, you know, classmates, friends, like, saying, like, oh, I come from Brown, I'm coming from this and that, and I was like, oh, my God, I'm coming from Mexico, and I have a background in you know, in science at the end, you know? But at the same time, I have all this support of my own work as being published.
You've been out here living life. You haven't been stuck in school like those mocosos.
So it's kind of challenging, but I feel I have learned so many things. It's like after being through the whole engineering, and then the people, you know, to losing my mom, and trying to, you know, working at a farm and trying to edit a book with friends. I'm enjoying this time. Even it's a lot of pressure, so many readings.
It's still, yeah.
Yeah, it's going to be okay.
But this is where you wanted to be.
I really wanted to be.
Aquí estamos.
I mean, to study literature, it's like, it's wonderful. It sounds kind of boring, but it's not.
I want to study tortas. So nobody wants to give me a scholarship for that.
So I feel so happy that I'm studying.
I'm glad. Because I know for a lot of folks, especially if you're older, going back to school is always difficult. But, you know, I'm glad you have a support network. You can always count on me to help, you know, if you want me to go speak to your class. But it's hard to go out to UCLA, so
I can't promise.
No,
you must be joking, but, I mean, there's some, like, right now, like, we were talking about what's going on here in Boyle Heights and everything.
Yeah.
Sometimes they approach the academia does to some subjects, and then you realize that yes, you can read through the articles, through the books, but at the end you have a reality going on there, and then you can just you be there, right?
Experience it. I'll let them experience it. You're still doing school, obviously. You're still writing. You're still going to festivals. We were talking about this before, earlier. Your next public event here in LA, it's going to be at the Mexican Consulate. And for my non-Mexican compañeros out here, it's in MacArthur Park. It's off 6th Street, right? Yeah, just Google the Mexican Consulate. And Nilsa, what is the event?
It's a reading. I'm going to be, as we were doing here, sharing my experience as a writer, and then sharing some of my latest short stories.
Is it just going to be you or other people too?
Just you? I'm going. Really? Just you? Wow, the solo show.
Wow. So February 13th this year at the Mexican Consulate.
Yeah.
Your best bet for like real detailed information is to look up the Mexican Consulate on Facebook. They also have a Twitter. And if you're inclined like I am, you can also sign up to the email newsletter. But mostly I just sign up to find out when's the best day to go get my passport renewed. Or to know when like we're getting kicked out of the country. Is there anything else that you wanted to share with folks? How can, if somebody's, you know, listening, then they're like, they really like what you're, you know, yeah, like they want to maybe read the whole story. ¿Cómo te encuentran? How can they find you?
Okay, if you Google my name, which is NYLSA.
It'll be on the episode. So.
Okay, Nilsa Martinez, they can find some of my work on the internet, and as well, they can find some of my books that they can buy if they want.
Okay. I'll include some of that info in the text of the description.
Yeah, so
network,
I have a few titles that I have published. They can find my work and buy it if they want, or read it if they find some of the things that I have published online. And yeah.
Awesome. All right. Let me check something really quick to see if Diosa's here, because she's the one recording a show after me. Is she here? I don't think she's here, right? No? Let me ask Nico really quick.
Nico!
Do you know if Yosa's gonna
be here tonight?
I don't know. I mean,
she shows up.
Alright. So she's not here yet. Maybe she's not gonna be here. So, podemos seguir cotorrando. We can keep going. So now that we have some flex time, this is something I wanted to ask you, but then since the three amigos are here over here, you know, sitting on the casting couch, I kind of wanted to ask this because I know this could go into like a really long, convoluted conversation about the difference between kind of like what I was speaking to earlier, how with you and your creative process, you know, you're out there listening. You're listening to what people are saying around you, maybe what's happening in the news or what you're seeing for yourself and hearing for yourself. And for me, being the complete opposite, just fully throwing myself in there personally and making it exclusively about me, you know. And then again, too, like, your process of, like, you've been to school, you've been doing this on a more formal basis, and you are doing it now. And folks like me who are just like, a mí me vale. I'm just going to write, and it's going to come out. And somehow, for me, people have told me, like, they enjoy what I write without, like, having to, you know, go to school or, I mean, beyond what I had to go to. But, you know, where are you in that, like, the debate of, you know, to be a creative person? Do you need to go to college? Do you need to be in academia? Do you need to have that formal training?
Absolutely not. I mean, to be a writer, you know, like what I'm doing right now, to study a PhD, it's a completely different thing. It's not about being creative. It's not about, like, I'm going to learn there how to write. No. I mean, it's helpful, I would say, as a writer, to go to workshops. Why? Because there are some other people with the same interests. Like you.
Of course.
So you can share your work, and then if it's, because when you start writing, you think that you're creating the most, a very unique thing, the thing that is so new, revelating everything. And sometimes it's not. And probably it's going to be not. But so to share with some other people that can give you some feedback about what you're doing, it's helpful. And in addition, in those workshops, you can get ideas about what to read, what can help you out. Like, yeah, you know, you're kind of writing this type of literature that is going to be, it's going to help you if you read this author or that.
Yeah.
Not because you're going to try to write like them, just that to see a way to a good exercise of what you're trying to do.
Exactly.
So that's what I would say. Workshops are beautiful. I know here in the United States, it's very popular to do an MFA in creative writing and everything.
It becomes a joke at some point.
So,
but a very expensive joke.
I can talk by my experience in Mexico. So it's like a best writers from the whole story, they didn't attend to any, you know, like a MFA to be writers. They just write with all the passion. But yes, you need to do some work. It's not like you're just writing whatever you want. It's more like you work, you write and you work through your own words. And then you need to read a lot. That's very important.
It's true. I mean, it goes without saying, and you spoke to this before, too. Whatever field, when we were talking about the advice for folks, whatever you decide to go to, if that's going to be your thing, then you should know it inside out. You know, learn about it, you know, study it, know its history, and try to learn as much as you can about it so that way you can be better prepared and, you know, maybe be an innovator in that field.
Yeah, exactly.
And I would totally agree, because for me, when I was writing, in the sense that it wasn't structured, a lot of, like, just simple things, super, super simple things that I just was super lazy not to do and, like, double-check myself, you know, like grammar, spelling, things like that, because for me, it was just a stream of consciousness. I just needed to get it out.
Exactly.
And because in the age of the internet, it's cool to do that, especially 10 years ago. It was easy for me to just put it out on the internet and just be like, here are my random thoughts.
Yes.
And people really, it was very surprising and very awesome sometimes to read people, you know, in comments or in social media telling me that was, you know, something they relate to. And that, you know, that they're glad that I shared that because they were going through something similar. And then you spoke to that too, that, you know, in sharing, you know, you see that you're not alone.
And then you have to think about, the way you think about your work is going to be published or done, right? It's not the same to think about publishing a book or to think about writing in a blog or just doing something, you know, like on a newspaper.
I mean, and
so it depends, and then the
it's different, the exercise.
Yeah, because I mean that's one thing I enjoy, you know, this, I mean, especially hearing y'all discuss it when we're hanging out at Ken's house. You, your husband Anthony, and Ken is like the literature world, you know, where your travels are taking y'all and what you're working on. But then like those little discussions we get where, you know, we're talking about like the way, I don't know, how did you ever like do a zine? Were you ever like, do a blog? Were you on MySpace?
There's so many stories. Through that time that I went to Guadalajara.
Were you going to open mics?
I did this fanzines. Yes, of course. Yes, I have two fanzines that I did. Yeah.
Really? What were they about?
About my with literature that I was writing.
Oh.
Yeah.
And did you just make them and like distribute them, or is it something more personal?
Yeah, were my short stories, but I did those two fanzines, and then I distributed the through different libraries. One in Mexicali and one in Guadalajara.
All right.
And then a friend of mine designed from the fanzine. Yes. Awesome. I did, and of course the photocopy process and everything. Yes. Yeah. No, I mean I have tried not all the things, but many things. One of the things when I came back to Mexicali in 2007, we had this web page that we stopped doing it, but I cannot remember. I mean, many things happened.
Yeah.
But this web page, which was about literature, to publish articles and reviews from books and everything.
Nice.
Yeah.
See.
I think it's still there, but I mean, we
stopped updating it.
Yeah.
Oh, man. And then I was just going to ask you the next thing, but okay. Yeah, I remember before I forget. So, you know, having grown up in Mexicali, having gone to school in Mexico, what was the culture shock for you when you came to the United States?
It's funny because I was having the same conversation with Ginés, my friend from school. I think my biggest cultural shock wasn't when I come here. It was more when I moved to Guadalajara. That was really a shock.
So that would be like the equivalent of like you grew up in a small neighborhood, a small town, then you moved to like the big city.
No, I think it was more like I was living in the border and then I moved to Mexico.
Oh.
When people name real Mexico, and then you have certain idea about what is being a Mexican, and then people telling you, no, you're not, because you're not like Mexican enough, you know?
Comes tortillas.
Yeah, like why do you have in flour tortillas when we just have
what? Flour tortillas?
Yeah, because it was like I'm from the north, come on.
Okay.
Or things like for me were kind of shocking. Or
the regional differences.
Why do you say chocolate when people say chocolate? Like the way I pronounce my words with the chicharrón, and they said chicharrón. So for me, it was very challenging to, in a way, to adapt my culture, which was from the border, to adapt.
Yes.
And then,
oh my God.
And then the type of society was more conservative than it was when I grew up. So I was like all the time wearing my shorts and my flip-flops and stuff because it was very hot. Over there, I know things have changed since, but I was I stopped wearing shorts over there because I was feeling like people were giving me a kind of weird look.
It's like, ugh, look, yeah, she's over there.
Yeah, like I was trying to get their attention when I wasn't.
You were just hot. You wanted to be comfortable.
I was just like that, right?
Yeah.
And some other things about like religion is kind of this type of double way of judge people. So you can do things, but you openly say things. It's like it's not right. It's like a generalization. Yes.
Of course.
I found the best friends over there. They were wonderful, but it was kind of shocking. To move to LA, maybe because I'm older, maybe because I have experienced that, it wasn't that shocking. Maybe it was, I would say, and then LA is like, it's easy to adapt since I'm Mexican. Maybe moving to a different city from the United States would be...
like Colorado or something?
Yeah, would it be hard? But here it's like, I'm not feeling like I'm not from LA because I feel like so many people are not really from LA. They're from different parts of the world.
Yeah.
So I'm not the only that who's speaking with a thick accent because everybody's accent.
I have an accent. I don't even know it.
So I think if I put those both experiences in a balance, I think I would say like that was harder. Even it was Mexico.
No, I understand. I mean, obviously, because I'm Mexican and I have more nuance in the culture. But I think a lot of folks can relate, you know, like if you're API, like folks who live inland, folks who live the coast, you know, all these like stupid little differences that pit everybody against each other and creates this ranking system of like we're the best ones and everybody else is below us, you know?
Yeah.
So I think a lot of folks can relate to that.
Yeah, and then I was like saying things like, I don't know, some dropping some words in English, not because I was an expert talking in English, because that's the way I learned them. Like
practice.
So, and they were saying, no, you're that's not Spanish. You know, like this kind of so critical. So.
Okay, so you've been in LA a while now. Actually, y'all live in the Valley.
I have. I took my time to come all the way here.
It was a trip to come
over
here.
It was a trip, you know.
So, in the time you have been in LA, and of course living in the Valley, what are your, some of your favorite things that you've like done
here? Mm-hmm. Well, there's so many things. First, to enjoy food, because there's so many things that
What's your favorite food right now, Carl's Jr.?
Oh yeah. I love food from but Thai food from here is delicious. I like all the Mediterranean food that
course,
you can find.
Of course.
But what I like from LA is like also there's so many. I mean, when people think about LA that is not from LA, I don't know. Like there's so many cultural things to do here. Like so many museums. Like I like to go to Norton Simon or the LACMA.
I spent because I get 2 weeks vacation from my job. Because I work at a nonprofit, that's part of what I did. And I was, now that you mentioned that, I'll like make a little plug to y'all and everybody listening. So the library, the Los Angeles City Library System, not the county, they have a new program that just started in December where with your library card, you can get free tickets to a bunch of museums.
Oh, really?
Yeah, it's called like Discover LA. So you just go to that specific website, like Discover LA, and I took advantage of it. You know, with my girlfriend.
I need to do that.
Yeah, we went to the Natural History Museum. Mm-hmm. We went to the La Brea Tar Pits.
Mm-hmm.
And we even went to the Grammy Museum in LA Live.
I haven't been there.
So you can get one free pair of tickets to a bunch of museums, including like the Norton. I don't think the Norton Simon, that's Pasadena. The Skirball, even to the LA Zoo.
Yeah, so that's the thing. You can enjoy, like, you have different museums you can go. Since I live in the Valley, I was telling my friend that. Even in the Valley, you can go and visit like this mission, San Fernando Mission.
Yeah, the sites of atrocities.
I mean, there are things to do here.
There's always something to do, but I'm just at home watching TV, so.
Yeah, then you can,
not living my best life.
Go downtown, come here, enjoy Boyle Heights. There are so many things to do, yeah.
Awesome. So, is there anything y'all wanted to add or you want to talk about? Nah, you're cool. Vamos a pistear?
Yeah.
All right. Let's set this up over here. So thank you again, Nilsa, for coming. I know it took a lot of coordinating, and even when we got here, we had miscommunications. But
I know.
we'll leave that for another day. Thank you. To Ken, Anthony, Hines. I was going to say he come up for some reason. Sorry. Perdón. I just hear the J and it's like, he come up. Thank you all for coming, you know, for reading. I'll have more info on Nilsa and where you can find her works on the description for the episode. And we'll catch y'all next time.
You know that you're my friend, and I'll say, I think I'll changed her mind. Well, I should have known it wouldn't be alright, but I can't live without her, so I won't even try. If I get drunk, well, I'll pass out on the floor now, baby. You won't bother me no more. If you're drinking, well, you know that you're my friend, and I'll say, I think I'll have myself a beer. Someday I'll think of what you say. Maybe next time I'll remember what you do. She looks like heaven. Maybe this is hell. She said she'd do it all again. She promised not to tell. If I get your friend,